Today's show is sponsored by Kurios Consulting. That is Kurios with a Y, K-Y-R-I-O-S. Real estate investing can be intimidating. That's why you don't do it alone. Kurios Consulting gets you from no real estate to your first rental property. My friend Steve did it right here in New Hampshire, and he wants to help other Christians do the same. Visit consultingbykurios.com. Again, that's with a Y, consultingbykurios.com. No more excuses. The world needs more Christians with passive income, not more passive Christians. Make it happen. The link is in the description. All right, everybody, let's get into it today. Today's episode is going to be focused on two Cody Leibolt tweets. And I'm not necessarily aggressively disagreeing with Cody here. I think mostly his tweets are just fine. But I did want to add something because I don't think it tells the whole story, and I think it's a little bit, it needs more. It needs more more nuance, more clarity, I think, in my opinion. And I'm using the word clarity, yes, because of Joe Rigney. So thank you for that, Joe. Now I feel guilty every time I use the word nuance. But in any case, so Cody Leibolt yesterday, he tweeted out the video with the two young ladies at NYU that they're at the pro-Palestinian rally and they're protesting and they're asked why they're there, like what's this all about, like what are the issues, right? And they don't have a clue. they're just there. They know they're pro-Palestine, you know, free Palestine and all that, but they don't even know why that they're thinking that way. They're just there. And she asks her friend, like, to help me. Can you help me explain the issues? And the friend has no idea. And so a lot of conservatives are making fun of this. And, you know, hey, listen, it's not very nice. But, you know, hey, this is how it is. And I know a lot of young ladies. Well, in my past, I've known a lot of young ladies like this. I used to live close to NYU. And so I'm very familiar with this kind of person. This is pretty common. It's pretty common. In fact, I know women in my life now that are kind of like this. And so everyone's making fun of her. So, you know, here's Cody saying, make her famous. Cody, that's not very nice. And Cody retweeted this a number of times and with different perspectives. One of the other ones was a very dramatic sort of like, this is the end of civilization. This is a dying civilization or something like that. And then he also retweeted Rod Martin, who said that it was funny that she said that she wishes she was more educated while going to NYU, which is very interesting as well. Just making the rounds, all that kind of thing. I'm going to connect this to one of Cody's tweets in the previous day. Now, Cody, I know you care about this kind of thing, so I'm not saying you were connecting these two. I'm connecting these two to make a completely separate point. So maybe you would connect these two, maybe you wouldn't, but that's not really the point of this video. I'm just making the connection because I thought it was interesting. So here we are. We're mocking this lady for not knowing what the heck she's doing at a pro-Palestinian rally. And I want to connect it to this tweet. So the day before, Cody said this. He said, question, we are losing the culture war to those who want only to steal, kill, and destroy. What counter effort do you propose? Answer, intellectual activism is the main response. Educate the nation. It will take many years. We have no guarantee of success, but if we do not succeed in the mission to educate the nation about basic moral principles, such as the rule of law, limited government, and the absolute right of the individual to his own life and his own property, then the coming generation's only option will be to live as slaves, to flee to a different part of the world, or to be caught up in a new civil war. There is no way to defeat a totalitarian American military outright. And it would be a disaster to attempt it. Also, a coup or a political victory is impossible while the voters and citizens are morally unclean. The most important broad goal right now should be the formation of a future generation capable of persuading the nation for the need of individual rights and the impropriety of the current state of affairs. The nation must be persuaded that public education, especially the public universities, should be abolished. It is immoral to force a person to pay for his own children to be taught to reject his values, which is the main goal of the public schools, and especially the universities. The intellectual life of the nation springs from the schools and universities, and also from the churches, and after that, from its media and entertainment. The centers of intellectual life are at the heart of our enemy's power. We must deprive them of these. We must peacefully do what it takes to abolish the educational system. Turning to the most immediate goals, expose the corrupt leaders that the good guys are voluntarily financing, such as the pinks leading the seminaries and churches. Boot the pinks out of the churches in order to assure that churches survive. Teach people how to talk about the need for better ideas. Do this by creating your own publishing platform or organizations, or support those platforms and organizations that you agree with and that you like and trust. Plan for a long battle. Our generation will not live to see societal reform, but we may help equip the generation that does. Not bad. Not bad. As you can see, I agree with a lot of this, and I think that a lot of this is very important. So I'm not counter-signaling education. I'm not counter-signaling building our own platforms and the parallel economy type stuff, parallel publishing, stuff like that. I'm not counter-signaling any of that. In fact, I participate in some of that stuff. So all good stuff for the most part. But what Cody's envisioning is sort of a kind of ground level, grassroots sort of intellectual kind of resurgence where we teach and persuade with convincing arguments and convincing media people to desire and want the right things. And this is something that's actually common in Christian nationalism. A lot of Christian nationalists, like, for example, Doug Wilson. And, you know, James White's not a Christian nationalist, but I consider him a friendly. He's like this, too, where they envision sort of this bottom-up kind of transformation of the United States or any nation, really. It's got to start from the bottom. It's got to start from the people who will, in turn, their morality will improve, and they'll, in turn, insist on moral leadership. And it's got to be bottom-up. You've heard that before many, many times. And I'm not against bottom-up transformation, but it's not the whole story. It isn't. And that is a little bit of a divide amongst Christian nationalists. And I don't think it's like the death knell that's going to kind of divide us forever. It's not like that. It's just a matter of emphasis, in my opinion. It's a matter of emphasis. Because here's the thing. When Doug Wilson says something like that, or maybe James White, or anyone really that says something like that, well, I mean, from their perspective, that's what it has to be. I mean, Doug Wilson is not the mayor of Moscow, right? And he's not the governor of Idaho, and he's not the president of the United States. He's not involved at those levels, right? He's not even in the administrations. So from his perspective, the work that he does is absolutely bottom up. I mean, he's a minister in the church, and he's got to administer the sacraments, and he's got to counsel his people, and he's got to teach his people. And so education and sort of improving the morality of his people and guarding their hearts and shepherding his flock, that's what his job is. That's all he does. And so, and then of course he writes books and stuff like that. And all of that is bottom up type stuff. And so from his perspective, from James White's perspective, from a lot, basically you and I's perspective, that's what we're doing. I mean, that's what I'm doing with my children, right? So I've got four sons, and my goals with my four sons are to obviously, teach them to love the Lord, but I want them to be three times as much of a problem as A.D. Robles was. And there's four of them. So you do the math, right? I mean, I went to public school, so you do the math there. I want them to have an outsized impact on a positive future. And that's what I'm training my kids to do. They're going to be a big problem. And I've got four sons so far. So, God willing, right? I pray for that every day. So that's what I'm engaged in every day, right? I'm engaged in sort of this intellectual and educational and persuasion that Cody's talking about here. But here's the thing, though, guys. Most people are like this. right? Most people are like this. It didn't really take persuasion and clever arguments and intellectual exercises or activities to get her at the Palestinian rally. She's not thinking. She doesn't have any idea what she's doing there. I mean, I'm sure she would have liked nothing more. It's not like she's hiding that. She would have liked nothing more than to wax poetic about the issues if she knew about them, but she doesn't know about them. And this is the reality that I think all Christians need to understand, right? A lot of people, a bigger percentage of people than you think, are like this lady. They go with the flow. They do what everybody else is doing. They want to fit in. And so this is the thing, like, you know, Cody says persuasion is the key, right? You got to persuade people to value the right things. You got to persuade people with arguments and media and all this stuff. And here's the thing, like, I mean, persuasion is definitely part of it. But how do you make an argument with this woman to get her to think correctly if she's not thinking at all? She's just acting. Like, you can't. If you're not thinking, if you're doing something, you care about an issue, but you're not thinking about it, there's really no argument that you're going to hear that's going to persuade you otherwise, because you're not thinking in the first place. And so persuasion doesn't matter to most people, right? Most people do what they're told. And there really is, like, listen, like, the reality is, you know, as Americans, you know, we kind of eschew, like, the class system, right, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. But no matter how much you hate the fact that there's different classes of people, it doesn't change reality, right? It doesn't change reality. And a lot of people that are not in the ruling class, they just do as they're told. They do and they feel and they act the way they're told to act. And we can see this too with the LGBT stuff. It's very easy to see with that, because it wasn't that long ago that Barack Obama, you know, was against homosexual marriage, right? And that's just what the position was. And then the position changed, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's gay in June, right? Oh, June rolls around. I guess we gay now. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. And it's not because they were convinced or persuaded that that was right. It was that they went with the flow. They wanted to fit in. Now, I like Barack Obama. He's my leader. And so when he was against gay marriage, they were against gay marriage. And now that he's for gay marriage, well, now they're for gay marriage. Now June is gay month. Like, that's how a lot of people are. There are a lot of people are like that. A lot of people are tutored and taught by the leadership, by the law. The law is a tutor. And so how does this work, right? So they, you know, the leadership class, the ruling class, and they're everywhere. They're in politics, they're in business, they're in media. They decided what they were going to push, and they pushed it, and lo and behold, the people listened. And the people that agree with it, they don't know why they agree with it. And the people that don't agree with it, a lot of them just stay quiet, and they go with the flow too. This is just how people are, and they've always been this way, and they're going to be this way. And so that's the reality. And so intellectual activism, I'm all about it. I think it's good. Persuasion, it's good. Bottom-up, you know, transformation, it's good. But there's also a way, and we've seen it used for evil recently with the LGBT stuff, for top-down to also affect positive change. We've seen it used for negative change, and it can definitely be used for positive change. And so I don't say that the top-down stuff won't work. I think that it has to be both. It has to be both. And so education, I'm not counter-signaling it, Cody, so don't hear me saying that. But I actually have a much higher view of political, what did you call it here? Let's see if I can find it really quick. He says that a political victory is impossible while the voters and citizens are unclean. I completely reject that. I completely reject that. It doesn't, like, from, think of it this way, from the pro-evil, pro-LGBT perspective, most people in this country were not pro-gay. And the voters were not pro-gay and all of that kind of stuff. And yet they became that way. And how did they become that way? They were tutored by the law. We get a little bit of a glimpse of this, I think, in the Book of Kings. Like if you think about the Book of Kings, right? So by the way, if you like Christian nationalism, you're interested in the topic, and you're interested in like what the civil magistrate is allowed to do and how we should view them and how God views a civil magistrate and stuff like that, read the Book of Kings. It is very, very insightful. There's so much good stuff that you can glean from the Book of Kings. But think of it this way, like Jeroboam, right? Evil king. And it's so interesting how he is rebuked by God. It says that that Jeroboam has committed a lot of sins, and he's also caused Israel to sin. Now, obviously, we understand that every person is responsible for their own sin. So there's some way that Israel, you know, wanted to sin as well. But the thing is, the Bible says Jeroboam, with his, you know, reforms and his idolatry and stuff like that, he caused the people to sin with him. And I don't think he was like persuading people, oh yeah, you know, it's actually really good to worship Baal. No, he just went and did it. He just started doing things. And the people saw that and, you know, they wanted to fit in. And so they followed the king into that sin. And God blames Jeroboam for causing the Israelites to sin. And so we can see that if Jeroboam was a good thing, he would actually have caused the Israelites to do what was right. In fact, we have examples of this. There was what was the king's name? I think it was Asa. Hold on. Let me look it up real quick. Hold on. Yeah, it was Asa. I was right. Excellent. King Asa. Here's what the Book of Kings says. This is chapter 15. He says, "And Asa did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David his father. He took away the Sodomites out of the land and removed all the idols that his father had made." That's top down. That's top down. If the people of Israel, which they definitely were, you know, wanted to utilize Sodomites in their everyday lives and stuff like that, he didn't try to persuade them that they shouldn't be sodomizing each other. He didn't try to persuade them. You know, he just took them away. He banished them. Get them out of here. We're getting rid of them. And so now if you wanted to be a sodomite, you had to do it secretly, or you had to, you know, do it in the back alleys, or you had to risk your life to do it. But he top down said, no, we're not doing this anymore. That could happen today. That kind of thing could happen and should happen today. And so what he's doing is he's setting the tone, and the people have to follow or not. But there's gonna be consequences there. That's a top down reform. It took no persuasion, no education, no intellectual arguments. He just did it, and that's possible. That's possible. When we read the books of the Bible, we see so many examples of impossible situations. Cody calls political victory an impossible situation, but we read again and again and again, God works the impossible. You know, Nehemiah asks for some money and asks to be let go to go rebuild the walls. And the king just is like, all right, sure. What? he just said, okay, that can happen again. We have the same God. The Bible continues. And also Maacah, his mother, even her, he removed from being queen because she had made an idol in the grove. And Asa destroyed her idol and burnt it by the brook Kidron. Again, top down, his own mother committing idolatry and making the people commit idolatry as well. He says, all right, not only are you no longer queen, top down. I didn't persuade anybody. He just went and did it. He did it. But then he destroyed her stupid idol top down and improved the situation of Israel. No longer gave the Israelites opportunity to commit idolatry in that way anymore. And he didn't make any arguments. He didn't try to convince anybody. He didn't persuade anybody. He didn't make a play to show how idolatry is wrong or any of that. All that stuff is good, by the way. But he was the king. He was a civil governing authority. He could do things. Really good stuff. Top down. Political victory. That can happen again. Also, this is interesting too. This is the next verse, and a lot of people say, you know, that are against Christian nationalism that it can never work because we never have a perfect king, and so it's going to be in the name of Christ, but it's going to be imperfect, and that's wrong. So we got to wait till Christ returns before, because there's going to be a Christian nation, but only when Christ returns, because he's the only perfect king and he's the only one that can do it right, and all of that. I wonder where you got that kind of perspective, because it certainly wasn't from the Bible. It certainly wasn't the Bible. Listen to this next statement. We're talking about a good King Asa, who did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. He made all of these reforms, right? We're going through the list. But listen to the next verse. But the high places were not removed. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was perfect with the Lord all his days. He was devoted to the Lord all his days. Even as in the same sentence, that we got to believe both these things. We got to hold both of these things together. The high places were not removed. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was perfect with the Lord all his days. We got to have a category for that. We don't have to have the perfect Christian prince or the perfect Christian president or the perfect Christian governor or whatever the case may be. We don't. But he does have to be considering the Lord and devoted to the Lord, and his heart has to be right with the Lord and making efforts and making reforms that have the Lord in mind. That is good. God smiles upon that. So we don't have to be all dramatic about things where it's not perfect, so therefore it can't be Christian. This is a very dramatic and over-dramatic and weird perspective that I have no idea where it comes from. It doesn't come from the Bible. That's not how God talks about things in the past. And we have the same God. We have the same God. And so, no, political victory does not require sort of a groundswell of, you need 51% of the people that say that abortion's wrong and should be abolished before you can abolish it. That's not how it is. That's how politicians trick you into not doing the things that they should be doing. That's what that is. That's what that is. So if I wanted to disagree with one thing in Cody's tweet, the idea that politics... political victory is impossible while the voters and citizens are morally unclean. I don't agree with that. I think that goes way too far. And so here's the thing. When it comes to this kind of transformation of a nation, transformation of a country, you need to have education. And you need to have intellectual activism. That's all really good stuff. But it's not enough. There is no amount of education that's going to cause this woman to start thinking. She's not thinking. If someone is not thinking, your arguments have no effect on them because they're not thinking anyway, and arguments require thinking. And if they're not thinking, the arguments that require thinking are going to have no effect. Lots of people, and this is not to their benefit, but lots of people just want to fit in. And as Christians, politically, we need to understand that reality. Not everybody is well thought. Is thinking things through well like you are. Not everybody's doing that, and we need to recognize that. And the law really is a tutor. The law really does tell people what's right and wrong. The law is actually a form of persuasion, because here's the thing: Cody's talking about persuasion in terms of media, in terms of education, intellectual pursuits, and things like that. But oftentimes persuasion is, if you do this, you're going to go to prison. You're going to get executed. That's persuasion too. And honestly, let's just face it. There's a big percentage of people that is the only persuasion that they actually listen to. The fact that if I do this, it's going to cost me my life. That's not nice to think about, but there are a lot of people like that. And so the law itself is a tutor. We know this from the Bible, and we know this from everyday life when we're just being honest with ourselves. And so political victory is possible, and it does not require 51% of people to be clean or morally good or anything like that. What it does require, though, is educated leadership that has the will to act, the will to persuade through the law, the will to teach through the law, with a mind devoted to God. I love how the King James puts it. His heart was perfect with the Lord all his days. How could it have been perfect? He didn't remove the high places. That's something that you need to think through. How is that How can that be? Because I think that with our modern ears, we think it can't be. But obviously, it be, because the Bible says so. And so now we got to take what the Bible says about this imperfect leader, but he had a heart perfect with the Lord. And what that means for modern leadership. Because it is removed a little bit from the time of the kings, but the principles remain the same. And so anyway, that's my two cents. This bottom-up type revolution or transformation, yes, I'm for it. But political victory and top-down transformation is not only possible, but I think it's necessary to happen. It's got to be both, and that is the goal. In any case, I hope you found this video helpful. God bless. You know, another good example of this is with, I'm forgetting his name now, too. Hold on. The reason I forgot his name is because I don't think he is named. So the king of Nineveh, right? He repents. King of Nineveh repents. And he issues a decree for everyone to change their ways. Everyone in the country, down to the cattle. They're all spared because the king repents top down. And that sets the tone, and people just want to fit in, and they repent as well. This is something that we should not think of as an Old Testament relic, that, you know, God was different back then, or he operated differently back then, and that's not for us today. We shouldn't think of that as an Old Testament relic. That's something that we should pray for. That's something that we should strive for, plot and plan and scheme for. It's definitely worth it. And so intellectual activism, yes. But also, some of that stuff would be nice as well. I hope you found this video helpful. God bless.